You are listening to a sermon by Janice Kreider, recorded on Sunday, August 23rd, 2026, at Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Someone has said that young people have little memory but lots of time. Older ones have lots of memory but little time. So we have someone in our congregation, he's not here today, but he's not yet 12 weeks old. And then we have someone who's 100 years old. The young one's memory is growing. He has memorized the faces of all the people in his house, and probably the faces of regular visitors. He's memorized the space where he lives. He probably recognizes everybody's voice and the sounds around him. And I'm sure he hears the dogs barking and knows what that's about. His memory is growing, but it is still small because he's only been around for a few weeks. He has lots of time ahead of him in his life. Someone in their 80s, 90s, or 100s remembers things that happened in the past century, even in the first half of that century. But, and I'm in that group, we have little time left. Lots of memory and little time for us older ones versus little memory and lots of time for the younger ones. So today I'm going to tell two stories. One is from the Bible, and one is a family story. Memory can be fickle. We have an example from the last two verses in today's Exodus passage, and I'm using a slightly different version than what you have in your worship sheet. The Egyptians subjected the Israelites to hard servitude and made their lives bitter with hard servitude in mortar and bricks and in every kind of field labor. They were ruthless in all the tasks that they imposed on them. The Israelites were abused, but what did they remember when they were in the desert? Numbers 11:4 says, "We remember the fish we ate in Egypt for free, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Now our lives are wasting away. There's nothing but manna in front of us." They forgot about their intense suffering in Egypt. When Joshua and others were delegated to explore the land that had promised, some of the ones, when they returned, not Joshua, but some of the others, came back with a discouraging report. "All the people we saw in it are huge men." The naysayers influenced the community and the people became frightened. And in Numbers 14, the entire community raised their voice and the people wept that night. All the Israelites criticized Moses and Aaron. The entire community said to them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the desert. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our children will be taken by force. Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to each other, "Let's pick a leader and let's go back to Egypt." Well, they did not end up by picking a new leader, and they did not go into the promised land. Instead, they went back to the desert, a disappointment for Moses, Aaron, Joshua, and some others, and a disappointment to us as we read this story because we want them to go for it. So they're back in the desert. Now there was no water for the community, and they assembled against Moses and Aaron. The people confronted Moses and said to him, "If only we too had died when our brothers perished in the Lord's presence. Why have you brought the Lord's assembly into this desert to kill us and our animals here? Why have you led us from Egypt to bring us to this evil place without grain, figs, vines, or pomegranates? And there's no water to drink." The scripture says that the Lord got angry with the Israelites on numerous occasions. It finally came to this in Numbers 32. None of the persons, this is the word, this is from the Lord, none of the persons that went up from Egypt, those 20 years old and above, will see the fertile ground that I promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they didn't remain true to me, except Caleb, Jephunneh the Kenizzite's son, and Joshua Nun's son, because they remained true to the Lord. The Lord became angry with the Israelites and made them wander in the desert for 40 years until the entire generation had died, which had done evil in the Lord's eyes. Even as a child, when I heard this story, I thought it was unfair. I enjoyed having my grandparents, all my grandparents, and even one great grandmother, and young siblings and cousins. Stripping away a whole generation and their memories seemed like a terrible thing to happen. Not all of them were guilty. But this purging of a generation over a 40-year period certainly got rid of the complainers who remembered how good it had been in Egypt with that list of fresh fruits and vegetables in their Mediterranean diet of long ago. And yet, it's amazing. Someone remembered both the good foods and the abuse. Someone remembered the joys and the disappointments. Someone remembered the good and the bad, because the whole history eventually got written down. And we value having that story. Now for a family story. My mother had seven brothers and one sister. So the first cousins on that side totaled 40. The family name is Stuckey. My oldest uncle was interested in the family history, writing about it and collecting old documents. As one of the oldest cousins, I was intrigued by his interest and have taken it on myself as I realized that I have memories that the younger cousins do not have. So 2 weeks ago, we had a cousins gathering in Ohio. I used that as a motivation to write a history of the Stuckey family's 100 years in France. My five great grandfather was an Anabaptist who left Switzerland sometime before 1733. And then immigration to Ohio took place in the 1830s, so that's about 100 years. There are no diaries because some of them could hardly sign their names. So I had to piece things together from government documents, the translated archives of the Mennonite Church in Montbéliard, which is near Alsace in eastern France, and articles from Souvenance Anabaptiste, the French Mennonite historical periodical. So the story today is about Maria Stuckey. She is not my ancestor, but she's a sister of an ancestor. She immigrated to Ohio with her widowed father and four younger siblings when she was 28 years old. It was not typical to still be unmarried at that age, and eventually she married in Ohio. But before she immigrated, she experienced the trauma of becoming pregnant. It happened when she was 25 years old. The baby was a boy, and she named him Pierre, and he lived less than 4 months. Last Sunday, we heard about Hagar, who had an ex spiritual experience in the desert and a revelation about the God who sees. We don't know if Maria was comforted like that, but she probably didn't want to be seen by anyone. Maria would have been 3 months pregnant at her brother's wedding, but at that time she could probably still hide her pregnancy. All births and deaths had to be reported to the maison commune, the town hall. Usually that was done by the father, but there wasn't a father. So the midwife reported the birth. When the child died, the grandfather reported the birth. Usually it was men who went to report the things like that. Maria had two older married sisters who lived about 8 kilometers away, who may have been of some support, but her mother and grandmothers were no longer living. So I've encountered numerous other cases in France where a young unmarried Mennonite woman gave birth. In some cases, actually more than I would expect, the child dies within a year. But some live and get accepted into a family when the mother later marries. And this is the case of my great-great-grandmother, Verena, in another line of my family. Her mother later married, and Verena got raised as if she was the oldest daughter. She ended up bearing 15 children, that was one set of twins, and was active with her husband in the beginning of the Holdeman Church in Northwest Ohio. I think they hosted John Holdeman in their home. The fact that Verena did not have a father was not always clear because sometimes she was known by her stepfather's last name. People try to hide those kinds of things so that they are not seen. When my cousins gathered, I highlighted some things from the history that I wrote, and this was one of the things I highlighted. As I mentioned, I'm one of the oldest cousins. I had a chance to talk with a cousin who's 23 years younger, someone I had barely ever seen. His wife, whom I had never met, was there. And after hearing this story, she confided to me that she was raised in a family that her mother married into. She knew who her biological father was. I don't know when she found that out. But I was glad that I told the story of Maria and mentioned Verena, because then this cousin's wife felt free to tell me about her family background. Switching gears now. Romans 12, 6. It says, we have gifts that differ. How do these gifts differ as a young person, as an older person? Young children have gifts. They give us hope. The young person may not have many memories, but they are full of energy, curiosity, and are very good at observation. These are their gifts to the community. Older people have memories and stories. Some older people in our congregation have written books about their lives, and that's a gift to us. But not all older people want to write a book. But we all have stories to tell. And we can embody the traits mentioned in Romans 12:8. Being an encourager, giving in sincerity, being compassionate, being cheerful. Having a perspective of living many years provides a good basis as we bring these gifts to the community. And we can also echo the thankful outlook of Psalm 124:8. Our help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth. None of us, even the oldest ones, lived in the time of Jesus. We do not have a memory of the physical Jesus, but he wants us to remember him. We do this by a ceremony where we eat a piece of bread and remember how he shared pieces of bread with his followers. But you might not agree with me, but I think just as important, and maybe in fact more important, we remember Jesus by what we do with our lives, how we use our gifts for the community and for our neighbors.